It's 10-1 right and a new reel, and I'm setting up Carl and Jackie Op this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971. Now, this is Channel 1 right on a new reel, and I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie Op this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971. This is Channel 1 right on a new reel, and I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie Op this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971. This is Channel 1 right on a new reel, and I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie Op this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971, to talk about Mr. Patterson. This is Channel 1 right on a new reel. I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie Op this Friday night, 16th of April, 1971, to talk about Mr. Patterson.
Michael.
Yeah.
I don't reckon you did, did
you?
Oh, no. Michael, is that the thing?
Why'd you turn it off?
Yeah, old Uncle Gus, boy, he was deaf in one ear.
That's so clear.
Yeah.
And they said it's, I mean, all he'd do if he wasn't interested in, he'd just let you talk into his deaf ears and he'd explain things. And he never did turn you down. He just never did hear what you said. And of course, old Wilson Boozer, see, his widow lives out in our neighborhood, and he was the same thing. I don't know if I ever told you this story or not. I went down to the Citizens Bank.
I can't hear one in town.
I went down to Citizens Bank one day to get a loan, see, and I was dealing with Boozer. And I told him how much money I needed. And so he...
Oh, you had dealings with Boozer?
Yeah.
He's my neighbor.
And so...
Is he still your neighbor?
No, he's dead.
Yes, man. I thought he was, yes.
His
and
wife.
So he was counting on his fingers, yeah. Like this, he figured it up. So he figured it up like that, see? And so the same day, I went out to lunch with Bill Pennington, who worked for me, and Justice Williams, who was president of the Florida National Bank. And we were eating, we got talking about something, and we got to arguing about some figures, and Justice said, well, here, I'll figure it out. I said, anybody got a pencil? Of course, I always had a pencil. So he used my pencil to do all this figuring and showing us where we were wrong. See? And I said, darn, this is a funny day. This morning I dealt with a banker who counted on his fingers, and now I have lunch with one who doesn't even carry a pencil. And old Justice looked at me and said, Carl, I learned a long time ago to figure with the other guy's pencil. But Wilson Boozer is special. He
Hello.
I suspect that whichever gate he arrived at when he died, he was laughing because he playing golf with Dick Schmidt, as a matter of fact, and a couple other guys, and they were a little joking, laughing, and Wilson leaned over to pick up his ball and collapsed and died right there. No hospital bill, no nothing.
He would have liked it that way.
No, we will. We'll call you. Are you
going
to
be there?
Miss
called me the other day and asked me to a party, and it was such a coincidence.
Yeah.
Because I never see her, you know. She's quite elderly.
Yeah.
And her daughter is Betty Price, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
They were having a party for a new neighbor.
Well, now, Boozer was in the business for a long time here.
Yeah. See, he was with the Pfeiffer State Bank, and that used to be with Chase and Kitchens. But it's now the parking lot next to Chase and Kitchens.
Yeah.
And then they closed that out, and it was dormant for a while, and then they started the Citizens Bank. And Boozer was president of the Citizens Bank. And J.B. Carmichael was vice president.
Yeah.
And so then...
Well, now, Boozer himself goes he was in business then for a long time here.
Yeah, well, yeah. A long, long time.
Long time. Well, now,
but I think Mr. Patterson was talking about Uncle Gus Pfeiffer.
Yes.
No, he mentioned Boozer.
No, he mentioned Boozer, but then he mentioned, well, maybe it was Boozer he was dealing with at the Pfeiffer State Bank at the time.
Because remember when he was building that house, Carl,
yeah,
he got the doors from us.
What's that?
We had taken off two doors in our kitchen. Our whole kitchen was just nothing but doors, and we didn't need but one. That we don't have even one anymore. But we'd put the doors up in the attic, and we were talking to him one day, Miss Pat, and he was talking about he had his house finished except he had to get two doors, and he was mumbling about the door. I said, well, I've got two doors, but they might not fit in your house, and he says, oh, I'll make them fit.
I'll whittle them down close
to the door. So we gave him those doors. And they, one of them was the glass, you know, with little glass things all the way down to the, it had gone out to the porch. If we ever sold our house, Carl said, well, people might want to put the doors back.
Well, Phil, how far back can you remember him up there, Carl?
Well, let's see. He came to work for us right after the war.
After the war?
Yeah, about 1946, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that was when Jackie and I were living on campus, and Jim was a little boy. We lived right in the center, see, so Jimmy'd disappear, and he had 37 different archway sections to disappear into, and Jake'd go out there looking for him, she'd have a switch, see, and Mr. Patton'd come on, Ms. Opp, now you don't need that switch, but I'll find that little stroker, you don't need to switch him.
He never would let him spank, and that's why, what's the matter with Jimmy to this day, because he wasn't spanked all those times.
And then, Jimmy was in high school, where they had this contest giving away a moped at the college inn, and it was sponsored by Philip Morris Company, so you'd turn in empty Marlboro or Philip Morris or whatever other cigarette they had, Alpine, packages, see.
Yeah.
So Jimmy wanted to get into it, so I got with Mr. Patterson, and he had all the janitors and maids. When we'd get these great big sacks of
it was really cheating, you know.
Empty sacks, and we'd sit there all evening long putting James W. Opp on these things, and Jimmy'd go over and stuff. Of course, they had huge boxes of these. Everybody
was
in on the thing.
Boys were,
well, I figured he had a reasonable chance of winning.
I would think.
I don't know how. We must have put 2,000 in those damn things. And of course, the other people were just putting their own in.
Isn't that awful?
I just kind of enjoying it all.
Oh, dear.
Some of the students were a little teed off. That it was unfair.
That was putting it mildly. I didn't know they knew about it.
Well, no, they didn't know about it, really, but they thought it was unfair. They thought it was for students only, see.
Jimmy
wasn't a student, but they never did find out how we really stuffed the ballot box on
that. That was really dishonest, Carl. How did you
well,
go
I wasn't
along
dishonest.
With,
it was
well, I didn't really think that they would get so many.
I never
know?
Could understand how a man who talks like Phil does there, you know, that a little old $1,000, and you go tell him how to spend it, how he could hire out to anybody.
Well, it was because he was over hundreds of people, hundreds of Negroes.
No, he had this whole work crew.
He was
the
boss down there. He had this big work crew, and he ran them. He was See, he hired out, but he was the boss of all those people. And they came to him and asked him for favors and this, that, and the other.
Oh, he was still the boss.
No, he was the boss.
No, he was in charge of, he was the labor supervisor. Now, Mr. Hurlong handled the maintenance and that end of it, see.
Yeah.
But Mr. Patterson was the, he supervised the cleaning crews. And nobody argued with him. And he wouldn't argue with anybody. I mean, that was the way. Well, he wouldn't argue with me. I'd tell him what needed to be done and what problems we had. And he'd say, all right, I'll take care of them. And I remember one problem we had. One of the maids came to Mr. Patterson, and some of these boys in this section, she was, you know, not too unattractive, even though what she was, black. And we had a pretty heavy load of students then, so there were four to a suite. And and these were older boys, they were veterans. And
no girls on campus.
No girls on campus. And so they'd been kind of trying to get close to this gal, and she went to Mr. Patterson and told him. And so I found out about secondhand, and I asked him about it. He said, don't worry about Mr. Officer, I've taken care of him. He said, they won't go bother her anymore. So I just went up there with my broomstick, and I told him a few little things. He said, they won't bother anymore. You don't need to make an issue of it.
With his broomstick.
Yeah, he always carried broomstick around. You know, you got some willing while punch around in the toilet, see if it's been cleaned properly. Never can tell when you come across a snake.
Well, that's kind of funny. We did lose some snakes in those dorms.
Yeah, that was one that happened this. No, I don't want any more.
No
coffee,
more. Yeah, what about you?
Yes, half a cup.
Okay.
I love her.
Yeah, we'll forget about that. The this boy came rushing down there, and right at the noon hour, and he had been out of Payne's Prairie and he got these snakes, and he had them in a sack and put them in his room. He's going to take biology class.
Yeah.
And came down and said one of these snakes was missing. He'd asked the maid about it. She never even turned in the keys.
She never
even collected her pay. Mr. Patterson went up and he searched that section from top to bottom. We never did find that damn missing snake. And how it could have gotten out, I don't know, because there weren't any pipe shads or anything. Uh-huh. And one was still in the sack. He had them in a gunny sack, but the other one was gone. And the first thing he did was ask the maid if she'd seen a snake. She took off. We never even got the pass keys back from her.
Well, now, something like that was always happening to him, I guess.
Oh, there was never a dull moment in those dorms. Something awful. Like bed bugs. Remember
once in a while,
this guy came in and said they had bed bugs, and it turned out the birds nested in the ivy around the windows, and it was mites from them.
Baby birds had left the nest, see, and the mites had just got in there, and they were hunting something warm. And but every once in a while, we'd have a problem about contraband or reports of thefts and missing articles and things. Mr. Patterson can shake down a room, or we weren't supposed to know to go in there and go into personal possession, but I'd tell him what the problem was. Well, I'll take care of it. And he could shake down a room, and the student would never know anybody's been through the drawers and the stuff.
Is that right?
Yeah. And if he found what we were looking for, well, we didn't make any issue. We just let it lie and just watch the situation until it straightened itself out. We'd have a lot of things, firecrackers, explosives. We don't worry about alcoholic beverages, but they'd be missing items. He and Mr. Hurlong got along pretty well. They respected each other. But Hurlong couldn't get along with the other people. But it, Patterson give him any trouble. It was a Mexican standoff that way. He let him run the cleaning. Furlong took care of the maintenance. And Mrs. Toff was the old lady. She'd been the one of the housekeeping supervisors there. She got a great kick out of it, how they kind of stood each other off. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. And she stood both of them off. She wouldn't take any guff from either of them. Well, she ran the linen room and the check-in and check-out of storage procedures.
Oh. Well, what did Phil, he just had to see that those darkies done the work?
Yeah, he usually, it was hard work. I mean, it was up and down the four flights. He usually checked out about, see, the 37 sections. If we started somebody new, he'd, stay with them the whole morning. The morning was devoted to the cleaning and of the rooms and the trash removal. And then afternoons were the full-time crew then went into waxing and polishing the floors and
yeah.
Doing things of this sort, cleaning screens and windows. So he would cover about, he got through every room in every section about once every 2 weeks. It's a lot of work. Well, then later, after he had his first heart attack, he slacked off pretty much on that. But he knew when they were doing the work, when they weren't.
Yeah.
He would train the new ones. We set up two sections where they would start the new ones, and these were handy where they were easy to supervise. And then once they got trained, but we always had a turnover.
Well, you didn't have any connection over there.
Yeah, I did then.
Well, that's the reason that you knew it.
Yeah, so that was before we started my
off-campus housing.
This was
you were on-campus housing.
Yeah, this was from when
Harold was in the circus.
Yeah, and well, that was a long time. It was until 1953, and then when we moved over to the old house where your office is now, old frame house there, well, Mr. Patterson was also in charge of that. Supervised the thing. So he'd come over about once a week, see how things were going. Maybe
was
doing well.
Well, now, was he always long and tall and gant looking?
Yeah.
Always. Ever since I came.
Always looked like he never had enough to eat in his life.
Yeah.
Oh, he used to tell me a lot of wild and woolly tales about when he was in the lumber business and the logging business.
Oh, don't you know he had them? Well, he had lived one life by the time he got over there, you see. He's
mm-hmm.
50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what, didn't he live in Georgia till then? How long had he been out here before we knew him, Carl?
I don't know.
He bought this tract of Cypress over here from the Pfeiffers. Or maybe it was from, who runs the mill? Franklin.
Franklin.
Anyhow, it was that big tract of Cypress out there. He had a mill out there in the early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't stay. They came back, though, later.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what he did, actually, during World War II. Never did. We'd talk about various things, and I knew he'd been a veteran, he was a veteran of World War I, but we were always so busy on immediate things that we never had too much time to talk about past things.
Yeah.
He used to talk some about something that happened up in Georgia. I wish I could remember. Who's living in his house, though?
I don't think anyone is.
Well, he sold the big house, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yes, and some nice people living there. And the other one, I guess, is to be sold. The little house down there that he bought or built and bought or something.
You mean he sold it before he died?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, where was he living then?
In that little house right next to it.
That was the one he built. That's where Stanley lived, I think. Mr. Stanley lived there.
Yes. Well, now, Carl, how did how did Stanley get connected over there?
Well, he was, I mean, he's some relative of Mr. Patterson's. I think he was a brother-in-law or something.
His wife's,
and,
they married sisters.
Yeah, well, he got started right after the war, electrical maintenance.
He come before Mr. Patterson?
No, he came after. I think Mr. Patterson got him the job over there, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But we were looking for an electrician, and then we found we couldn't hire one, but then electrical maintenance needed one, and so Stanley got in on that deal. And then, let's see, we got a Mr. Spear. I think Mr. Patterson recruited him for the heating plant, and then he used to help keep us supplied with night supervisors. We had.
Oh, yes, he would know the whole countryside.
Yeah, so we had a couple of long, lean characters from down this way who worked at night. And I forget that one old man's name. He wasn't too sold on it. Yeah, they usually get some more problems. But, you know, after all, we had to have him.
Well, what was... How did Mr. Stanley, Paul Stanley?
Yeah.
How did he fit in? He's an electrician?
Yeah, he's an electrician. He worked... He got a job with electrical maintenance. We used to have our own electrical man, and then it turned out to be a little better. Mr. Herlong... could take care of, minor electrical repairs and teach student workers how to change switches and replace light fixtures and this sort of stuff. And, but general electrical maintenance needed people that were more skilled on a full-time basis.
Yeah. Well, I had seen... Stanley, is he now he also took care of the labor over there?
No, he was just straight out and out electrician.
He didn't have anything to do with running it?
No. He was just I don't know what they would call him, probably electrician one now or something like that, the way they got it classified.
Well, who would he work under?
Well, he would work under plant. He was in plant and grounds division.
Yeah.
The general maintenance, well, it was then called general maintenance, now called plant and grounds. And they have an electrical maintenance and a whole raft of things, plumbing department, heating.
Painting department.
Painting. Well, who would be his boss?
Well, Cal Green is the campus engineer and head of plant and grounds. And then they got foremen on their heads of these sub-departments.
Well, who would be foreman of the electrical?
I really don't know anymore. Not having any dealings with him.
Can't keep up so much of it. Seemed like, Herlong, has he been there a long time?
Yeah, see, he came with us before the war.
He's the one that got Mr. Patterson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was the other way around.
No. He came to us. There was a man by the name of Wingate who worked in the business office, who lives in McIntyre, who lived in McIntyre. I don't know whatever happened to Homer. And when the housing set up opened with the Fletcher and Murphy Halls added in 39, we had a man by the name of Earl Brunson who was the... The way we had it set up, we had two men, a Mr. Mallard and a Mr. May. Brunson was head of housing maintenance. And then we had a Mr. Mallard and a Mr. May, and then we had three women. One of them took care of Thomas, one of them took care of sled, and one of them took care of Buckman, Ma Peeler, and Mrs. Toth, and a Mrs. Johnson. And Brunson got very dissatisfied with his job, and he decided he would quit. And so we were looking around for someone, and Herlong had just got out of the Navy. He'd been in the Navy for 6 years.
Mm.
And so he came on to work for us then. And he stayed until it was about 1942 or 43, and then he was very well apt to be called back into service, so he volunteered for the Seabees and got a... he had been a Navy chief before he was out of service, and I think he got a commission. I don't know what it was. Whether he got an actual commission or went back in as a chief in the Seabees. And he stayed in until... And he came back in 46. And
But that's when he went into the bar business, didn't he?
No. Then he got Mr. Patterson to work for us, because we changed the whole setup. See, the two of the housekeepers had retired, and Mrs. Toth was getting too old to push these crews. So I opened the linen room setup and put her in charge of that. And then we decided to just have a labor supervisor for the whole thing. And so that was when Mr. Herlong got Mr. Patterson. And then Herlong got kind of dissatisfied with things again and quit, and went to Miami and went in the bar business.
The bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, he owned a bar. And then he came up here and worked for in a bar.
On Northwest 13th Street, where Trader Tom's is now, I think.
You know, come think about it, he reminds me of B.D. Rogers.
Yeah.
And B.D.'s younger days.
And...
please, do you have Mike?
Oh, no.
He could take care of himself. I guess that's what he makes me think of. B.D. used to be a policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Navy, old Navy chief.
But thing is, Herlong didn't drink. But, you know, his wife, while he was away in the service, she was drinking like mad, and she became an alcoholic. And Mr. Patterson used to go out and try to get her straightened out all the time when Mr. Herlong was away. He used to go out and try to get her sobered up and talk to her and talk to her. He was very fond of her. I know he used to
think
of
Dorothy. Well, anyhow, Mr. Herlong left for that, and Mr. Bracken came in to take his place, but Mr. Patterson stayed on. And Mr. Bracken and Mr. Patterson... Well, that was a kind of a Mexican standoff, too. But Bracken was very arbitrary. I mean, you know, bossy man. I got along well with him, but he was hot-tempered.
Me and Mr. Patterson are for a long time. Got along.
No, they didn't get along. I mean, there wasn't any old buddy-buddy business. like a bunch of pairs of tomcats walking down the same alley, see. One of them take care of his side of the street, and the other one take care of the other side.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know Mr. Bracken. I know Mr. Herlong slightly.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I'd want to say Mr. when I talk to Mr. Herlong.
He's very formal about everything. I mean, he always calls me Mr. Opp, and I always call him Mr. Herlong. And one of the trouble is he's a very shy man. He just doesn't make friends easily, and it's hard to get him to open up. And yet he's got a tremendous fund of information, and he's been every place and done practically anything you can mention.
Well, how did he get in the Navy?
Well, he went into the Navy. back in the peacetime days.
He made something of it.
Yeah, he was a chief, and he and He came out of the Navy. He was a journeyman, electrician, plumber, and carpenter.
I'm going to write a book on all this.
And you ought to see that guy work with tools. I mean, it's beautiful to watch him work with tools. He screwdriver, pliers, wrench, saw, hammer, precise, accurate, neat. Not a wasted motion.
Yeah.
And he's real shit mouth. I mean, he doesn't volunteer things. And if you ask him a question, he'll answer it. So.
But if he gets started talking,
it takes. He's very, very cautious. I mean, he's not garrulous like me or voluble or anything else.
Well, he's not academic.
Well, no, he's not stupid by any stretch of the imagination.
I didn't say stupid. I said academic.
Now the funniest thing happened while Jackie was gone.
I'm glad you said that.
I was calling Mr. Hurlong when I want advice, you know, about something around the house. And our garbage grinder quit working. And, of course, naturally, the warranty's run out on it. And,
naturally.
So I got the book out, and we did everything that it said to do, see? And it just sat there.
Yeah.
And I looked up the local service people and called them, and they said, well, we don't have anyone to send out, but if you'll have the thing disconnected and bring it in, we'll fix it for you. Well, hell, it's tied into the dishwasher, see, and you got all this electrical stuff and hoses, and I mean, the dishwasher hose goes through the...
And nice of them, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't about to attempt it, so I worked it a couple more times, tried to do this system, and still didn't work. So finally, I called Mr. Hurlong one Friday and told him what the problem was. I said, I've got to get the thing taken off, taken down to the place, and get it fixed.
Yeah.
So he said, well, Mr. Benton, I'll come out Monday at noon if you'll be there. So I came home Monday at noon. They came right just a few minutes after 12. Mr. Hurlong's no little man, and Mr. Benton is about 6 inches taller than Mr. Hurlong, and about... I mean, he's a big man. So here they came with a bucket and a whole sack of tools, see. So Mr. Hurlong said, where's your book on the thing? So I gave him the book. He said, well, Mr. Benton, get down there and let's run it through the system again, see. So there's a reset button, see. And so Mr. Benton, in the meantime, put his hand down in. And I'd already discovered the grinder part turned freely, see. And so Mr. Benton gets down on the floor. I mean, you couldn't even see under the sink. He filled the whole hole, see? His hand back under there. And Mr. Hurlong said, now push it till it clicks. So he pushed it till it clicks, see? And Mr. Hurlong turned on the water and flipped the switch. The thing ran beautifully. And Mr. Hurlong turned and looked at me. And I said, Mr. Hurlong, I read that book, and I've had my fanny down on the floor just like Mr. Benton, and I pushed that thing click, and it didn't work. And Mr. Hurlong said, well, I guess we just scared it. And so they stayed there, and they ran it, they stopped and started about 3 inches. Worked perfectly. I guess it's just like a mule. You have to hit him in the head to get attention. Two big guys and a bucket full of tools that decided better cooperate or get taken apart.
I can think of tricks like that. I played just good. I won't name any of them, though. I'm glad to know that about Hurlong. Let me tell you, this rug I got from him.
Look at it.
I was over there one day. I said, "Mr. Patterson Cliff."
Well, you know where that rug came from? You know how old that rug is?
I'm pretty sure it's old.
It was bought in 1940 for Fletcher and Murphy Lounges, and it came from Tomlinson of High Point.
And he recognizes it.
Yeah.
It was in his office. imagine.
We had it in the offices and in the Fletcher and Murphy Lounge.
And then they took them out and gave them to anybody that wanted them.
Never had a pad under it.
It's the only thing I ever got in university. Mm. And fell over there, and I needed something in here to cushion it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bad echo.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, I didn't need it. this is all I needed right here. Anyhow, I went over there, and he said no, that it had to go through channels and all sorts of things. So. And I was about to go, and he said, well, I'll tell you, I've got a couple of these old war things over here. If you could possibly use them, be glad. We could just get rid of them. And he knew all along that's what I wanted. They were wore out, though. I don't, they wouldn't have any use for them up there, would they?
No.
And let me tell you, I went down to his house one night. We went down there.
To Herlong's?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's not many houses like that.
Mm.
Why, he's got an electric fixture. Just anywhere you'd want a little ray of light, he's got it. Inside and out.
We went over there after Mr. Patterson's funeral. We went with the Herlongs.
Well, see, he had built another house
Why, Phil built that old house over there with boards and different sizes. It's nothing. It's just an old country house compared to Herlong's.
But Herlong built another one out here that looks over, looked out over Payne's Prairie. This was when he was here the first time before he left, and it was a very well done house.
Yeah.
But as I say, he's a master craftsman. And now he knows air conditioning, and he learned that. He's also an expert marksman in the Navy. According to somebody who knew his Navy history, he was one of the top. See, he was in the China service, Asiatic fleet, and he spent his whole time in the Navy. Far East.
I would have thought he'd never been out for place.
No.
But they said that he was one of the top marksmen
on
the
bar
whole,
and then worked for
the whole
one,
fleet
you
there.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so strange that he worked in a bar because his wife being an alcoholic, you would think he'd want to stay as far away from that as possible.
I wonder how he got that yen.
No, I was in Miami. Of course, they've always had property, see. His father, he was telling me when we were at the house about how he had a hard time making the decision whether to build the house where it was or on this other property over near I-75, which apparently is quite a hunk of acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, Mr. Herlong, what are you doing on the property? He said, well, nothing. And I said, well, gee, the taxes on that much acreage must be pretty high. And he said, well, I'm doing a little bit with it. And he told me how many board feet of lumber they'd cut off the damn thing. And it was probably more than my total salary for the year. So I quit feeling sorry for him. He wasn't land poor.
Well, now, did they pay him down there?
At the university?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What would be his salary?
It's about $6,000 or something.
He wouldn't work for that.
Well, I don't know. I know when he started, when he came back. I got him back on the job over there. He came to see me.
He's working to get his retirement, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's
doing. I think the job at that time was about $5,500. It may be up to $7,000 now. But about a year ago, he and one of the other labor supervisors came to see me. They were really ticked off because, see, he's trained half of the mechanics they have on the campus, the plumbers and electricians.
Right.
Started in the old residence hall area, and he taught them the business. So.
Yeah.
And they just had some salary adjustments, and the plumbers had gotten, some terrific increase in salary. because they had to do it to keep them. And well, about lunchtime, these plumbers, and I've trained every one of them that got here, are making more money than I am now. And I'm running the whole business and still teaching them how to do plumbing. And
yeah, about that.
So they were putting me for a change of classification, and so I said, well, you sit down and write it out, and the arguments, and get the information, and we'll come back over, and I'll go over it with you, and see, you know, I can help anybody except myself. And he came back, he'd written out their statement and request, and I helped him correct it a little bit. And he and two others, they were going to quit. And then I urged him to get in touch with vocational people and see if he couldn't get vocational teaching. And anyhow, I found out later that they got them all adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to change it.
Well, now look, Carl, Mr. Patterson was gifted too.
Yeah, I know. I think.
Now, he wasn't, a master mechanic like Herlong. What is that Herlong who lived out at Minkanoke?
Yeah.
That's his daddy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A.Z., I believe his name was, or something like that.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
That great big column house.
That's where he brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where he gets some of his, that's curious, isn't it? It's curious. Now, he's still a workman.
Mm-hmm. But he's also a capitalist, when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
I mean, land, he's always had land, cattle.
Yeah. But old man Herlong, you see, didn't do anything except manipulate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess VJ never cared about manipulating particularly.
No, he didn't have a brother?
I don't know. I think there's some other...
Oh, if that was a house that big, he would have had a large family.
Sisters.
I think
sisters.
It was sisters, yeah. I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, that's the way it goes.
Doug, he had the floor bank where the bank bought out FIFO Bank.
Yeah.
I had to talk loud so he could hear that I hold him down. Tell us how pretty.
Yeah.
Boy, they were had their head this way and down this way, trying to keep him from seeing them laugh, you know. And I signed the thing and threw the check down there and walked out.
Well, now, Mabel wasn't there to duck out on you like she was at the chainsaw.
No.
Now, you've heard him talk like that by the yard.
Yeah.
He used to come and just talk and tell us all these stories. I wish I could remember them.
Well, that's a great benefit of these recorders now. He used to come over and when we were over the old house building there, he'd walk in, you know, sit down, light a cigarette. He didn't give a damn whether I was busy or not. That paper stacked on his eyes. And he just starts, oh, well, I can go, what the hell. I'm honored by the visit. If I ever need him for something, I can get some action. And so he'd sit there and talk for 30 minutes. About this, that, and the other, what was going on.
Who's... You just taped these last year, did you?
Yeah.
He sure didn't sound sick.
No, he didn't sound sick up to the very end. You know what?
I
forget where it was.
He just was in there, lit a cigarette, sitting there, and everything. And just
we'd just talk away and tell me what was going on, who was doing what to whom over on the other side of the fence. But we never needed anything. Well, we'd call him and he'd be over there right away and get it done promptly.
Well, now, he knew how to handle the niggers.
Yeah, he was very fair with him and stern with him.
Yeah, he was. But he just knew how to do it.
Well, he knew how to handle the group we had to work with at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, they were.
Now, whether he would be able to handle them now is something else. I don't know.
Under the new working conditions, and of course they're getting more pay now, and we're getting a better educated. Group, but
I don't know about that. Yeah.
Ones we got were country black people for the most part, and he was very fair with them, and he would sure, but it was the old paternalistic system. See,
sure.
I mean, it's my nigger, and nobody's gonna touch him if he's gonna. Well, it was the same thing that they used for years in relation to the courts. I mean, if you were black and you had a good white boss, you got tossed in jail. Well, you knew damn well he's going down there and get you out.
Yes.
But otherwise, you'd rot.
You know, that was one of the great satisfactions of that old system to be if you're a nigger to be a white folks nigger.
Yeah.
Now we got two out here right in front, Miss both of them women, Bessie and Daisy, and. Life means so much more to them than it does to these others that have come on after them, and they are sort of allergic to the white people, you know. White people like anybody else, dead under their feet. But now Miss Bessie comes up here, and I'm telling you, she is queenly.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Daisy comes up here, we go down there and sit on the porch with her, and she can report and tell you things that happened in 1925, you see. Just as clear in her mind, she can tell you what happened yesterday also. And now the thing that has held her together, she's worked for one of the Richardson boys.
Oh, yeah. So is he still out here,
Leroy?
Joel?
No, no, I don't mean those boys.
Oh.
I mean his daddy, the old generation. Now, she's worked for that same family since early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all the family that I've come across, the Richardson family, this Richardson family, they almost as if they invented prudence. They just breathe it.
Yeah.
They just sleep it. I've heard them at Sunday school. You never get below or above or beyond or outside. It's all prudence. And it's a model thing. Well, she's, I wouldn't say it's limited her view, but it's given her something to hold on to that she can reach, you see. And it just makes you feel sorry for these other little country, no count things. They come home and all she says they do is bounce that ball. Yes. She's 79 years old now, and she's doing something all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She, let me tell you, if you could just see it now, Faye could tell you more about it. I don't have that feel, but she's the best dressed woman in this whole country. She every day she has on a fresh apron and a different one.
It's
apron,
just
apron.
And starch.
Starched and washed in the kettle. With bluing.
I ain't heard of bluing since they started putting out a laundry detergent.
Yeah. Well, now that's the old school. Now, people like that used to work for Ms. Patterson. Ms. Patterson worked niggas too.
Mm.
And furthermore, they talked.
Mm.
Now, when they got to, they'd sit out on the back porch and talk. I can't imagine the nigger having much of a chance. Ms. Patterson gonna do most of it.
Yeah.
But she might have had a
little bit. Like in South Carolina, I know that.
Ms. Patterson was a great talker.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Patterson.
Yeah.
When I first knew them, I was attracted by Ms. Patterson. She raised vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, Lord, when I put in corn out here, I had 20 acres of corn and made silage of it. That's the first time I went broke. I followed her system. And it made beautiful corn. The only thing wrong with the corn, the fertilizer couldn't hold it quite long enough in the milk stage to get into this thing. But Mr. Gilbert came over here to see that corn. Mr. Patterson came over here. Fred Wood came over here. That was as pretty a piece of corn as ever raised in this country. I done it. Just like Ms. Patterson said to it. Yes, sir. I'd go down the store and I'd
buy. But you went broke.
Well, that was the fault of the corn. You see, I made silage of it, and the fertilizer wouldn't hold it quite long enough to keep the corn green, to keep the kernels milky, to put it into the pen here, into the ditch here. I'd go down there at Wynn's, and I'd want some soda, and Fred, Rob would say, what you gonna do with that? I say, I'm gonna put that on the corn. Well, he says, they used to put things like that on it, but I said, this is Miss Patterson's remedy, and I'm using it.
Miss Patterson had come up and he looked at all the acreages and say to me, what in God's name does that boy want with this acreage? I can't stand farmland. And he can't either. He hasn't got time to do anything with it.
Shake his head. That's the truth. He said, Miss Patterson runs the farm. I just can't take it.
Yeah, that wasn't right, though.
No.
He knew about it. He knew the horses. Now, he picked out the horse over here, the one that's got the most sense. Faye's horse. The little spindle-legged horse, Missy. But she's got the most beautiful movements, and she'll come up to you and always come up and inquire about you, how you getting along. Never fail. And most people come out here, especially the horse people, can't stand her. Phil picked her out the first thing.
He knows beautiful
horse. Phil, your horse.
He's
beautiful. Yeah. Now, I don't think Herlong knows anything about life.
No, I don't. No, he's got
cattle.
Mm-hmm. And
but he might.
Never can tell.
He's thought of a deep one.
He got pigs and he got chickens. And,
oh, has he?
Yeah.
His wife knows more about those.
Rather than darn menagerie out there.
And poodles.
Yeah, poodles.
That little daughter of his, isn't she darling?
She is really.
She's a doll, yeah.
What's her name again? I keep forgetting.
Patsy. She hadn't been here long. This is 1970, 60, 50. Is she 20?
Yeah, she's, I guess, a sophomore now at the university.
Yeah.
Well, how did she come so late? How long did
I don't know. You just never had children. Well, you know, those 30s were not, the population growth was not very much then.
Yeah, but it's picked up in the 40s.
Yeah, it started picking up in the 40s. And went through the ceiling in the 50s and 60s.
She wouldn't stay there with me then, huh? Now that is true.
Well, did he have a reputation for that, Raymond?
No. I'll answer that. No, most of the time. And he told me, he says, I'm going to make the notes for a year. He said, now, I know you can't pay for this in a year, but he says, when the year's up, he says, then we'll fix it like you want.
That is marvelous, and that he remembered all of that just so clearly.
Everything he told you.
Mm-hmm. How long was he and Miss Patterson married? Oh, was that his second wife or something?
Yeah, they started out together, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I've heard him talk about how he took Mabel away.
Yeah.
She was 10 years younger than he, and her daddy thought she was too young.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a good system.
Well,
that hat pushed on the side of his head.
Yeah, never took it off.
No, do we have a picture of him?
Yeah, there's some of our old. We had someplace. That's some.
I love to have a picture.
Probably.
A little snapshot of something.
He'd stand up, he'd come over here once one guy would go and get him and take him for a little ride. And he'd take a good walk around, take him for a little ride, bring him over here and see the cat and the horse.
Is that his hair?
Yeah.
I always wore a good hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mabel was going to give me his good hat, but I told her I couldn't wear it. And I just, what I wanted, I just loved that one, the old hats.
That one that he had worn.
And
he's always sticking on the side of his
hat. But I never was associated with him on the job, you see, up there where he was dealing with people. But to hear him talk about it, he, like you said now, he was boss man. He had perfect ease up there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He'd go and talk to anybody. Okay.
Yeah.
He was always...
Students, they would always come and talk to him. He'd sit down in their rooms and tell them some tales. And
yeah.
He was always really easy going. I mean, he never seemed to hurry, but he reminded me of a guy. My dad one time had two hired hands that one at the same time. And one of them, I think his name was Fred Feltmeyer or something. And the other one was Gus Fortreedy. Well, Fred was one of these guys that never seemed to hurry, see? And Gus was one of these guys that was always just driving and pushing. Dad was always reminding me, he said, Fred, he gets up and he doesn't seem to hurry, but he gets the horses harnessed and he's in the field at the same time Gus is, and Gus just works his tail off. And the herdier he gets, the behinder he is.
First
time
we
got intimate skin.
First
fight,
right?
Well,
it's really the
hardest.
No, it's just
spring's
come.
Yeah.
Just sit down, quit fidgeting. Let me tell you, these. I used to go over there and talk to Mabel, and I used to, and Phil would start talking. I thought, well, that's big mouth. And you know, it's the longest time.
Well, you appreciate it.
Before I found out that Mabel really didn't have much to say. And Phil was the one.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a long time. I was so slow. Well, she had right as much to say, too, but nothing like Phil. Now, he was in his family. In my view, Phil had a sort of genius. He could tell just like that how you were feeling. And surrounded by commonplace people.
Well,
and he got along with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's the thing, you see.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Well, he wouldn't take any guff.
Even
from
to get along with his... And she wasn't a Jehovah's Witness all her life, was she?
She was from way back.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, way back in the early 30s.
And he never did go along, never went along with it, from what I gather.
He didn't go against it.
He just ignored it, probably. Yeah. Figured that this too would pass.
But it didn't.
Oh, dear.
He's proud of Mabel's learning. She thought. The thing of it was, she didn't know what he thought. And he was, his mind worked that much faster. That, you know, he felt no compulsion to tell people how his mind worked.
Yeah. Now, I remember we had this, when Jackie and I first got our house in Gulfview, we had to get, Jackie's folks had a stove, a spare stove, and then they had our refrigerator, and so we had to get both of them over. And that stove was one of these old-fashioned electrics with the solid burners on it, not these rings that they have on them now. And anyhow, it gradually got so it didn't work, and you couldn't depend upon the oven at all. So we finally decided, made some changes in the kitchen, and I got a new little General Electric stove. And so I asked Mr. Patterson about getting rid of the stove, and he said, well, I'll buy it. I'll give you $10 for it. He did. And so I asked him, Mr. Hobby, it was real simple to fix that oven. He said, it's just a system of pulleys in there. He said, I just took the back end off the stove and got new pulleys and got it adjusted, and Mr. Stanley helped me with it. He said, that's a real fine stove. He said, it's got better insulation. It'll be running when that one you bought is worn out. And he put it in that little house he built. That's what he got it for.
Oh, really?
Put it in there. I expect the darn thing may still be up there.
Because,
see, those stoves they made, those original electric stoves, were porcelain finish, and they had, you could put your hand on the thing, and, when the oven was on the outside surface, and it wouldn't be hot.
Yeah.
It'd be barely warm.
Yeah.
And I forget about that. What a bargain he got. He didn't even have to pay for getting it fixed. Well, that was a real simple thing to fix. He took the back off and got them pulleys working right.
We made some gates over here one time, and I had a design, and he had a design. And I had a diagonal to hold it up, you see.
Yeah.
And he made it just strong.
Mm-hmm.
I put bolts in it because that old lumber now, you see, wouldn't hold up without just nails. And the one I put up was right there where we were standing, where the children ride it.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it had to have a diagonal on it. He didn't care for my model. And his, if it had been made out of good stuff, wouldn't it last it? But there's one thing against his. I had a bull that just had to scratch his hiney. And he weighed a ton when I got him, and in pasture stage, he still weighs 1,500 pounds. And that gate just got looser and looser. Until finally it just gave way in the middle.
Well, you see, these people, like the farmers, like when my dad was a farmer, you had to be a jack of all trades. You had to know how to fix machinery, and you had to be a carpenter. Had to know how to set fence posts and square them up, and you had to know how to dig wells. And,
oh yes.
And you just couldn't call somebody to come and fix your binder or your tractor, and you had to know how to doctor your horses, and you had to know how to mix. You didn't buy mixed food then. You grew your own, your corn, your oats, and your wheat, and you mixed your own proportions. It's quite a deal.
Yeah. I tell you what, another thing I did, I just remembered. He went from here up to the Okefenokee and cut a lot of timber up there. And Channel 5 had that little program on the Okefenokee Swamp, 2 half-hour periods with a banjo and one of these old guys talking. And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get them to listen to Channel 5, you see. Some people, just the idea of Channel 5 is repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
And Mabel listened to the afternoon programs. And I taped it. I keep this little thing here, the tape program.
Mm-hmm.
And I use both channels, you see. I actually need 3 channels, but I don't have a 2. I mean, that's part of my business. And I took it over.